Okay, just a couple of points I want to make. Ruchow's triangle about vascularization, because I didn't want to give the whole lecture, but there's a couple of posts I don't want you to miss. What's Ruchow's triangle? Anybody have their laptops? Okay, Google Ruchow's triangle real fast. What do you get? Ruchow's triangle. What do you got? Anybody have that? Yes? No? Anybody? Ruchow, V-A-R-C-H-O-W, Ruchow. Ruchow's trial. Ruchow's trial. V-I-R-C-H-O-W. Three factors that contribute to the formation of thrombi or thrombosis. Okay? Is Ruchow, am I spelling it right? V-I-R-C-H-O?
Yes.
O-W. Ruchow. Right? So know this. And the three factors are, and this, that is blood stasis, right? Which also could be just pooling. Blood stasis. What's another one? That one? What's another? Stasis? Venous stasis? Yeah, stasis. Venous stasis, blood pooling, vessels pooling. So when there's not a lot of movement, you're going to be more likely to get a thrombi, right? A clot. What else? What else adds to it? Yeah. That's so long. And normally this is injury. So let's call it injury. Vessel wall injury. Because remember when I said normally the wall's injured a little bit? And you get the plaque forming. That formed plaque can then break off and become a thrombi, right? A thrombus. They can then settle somewhere and include an artery and cause all this stuff we were talking about. Yeah, that's it, what's the third one? Changes in the blood. Like dehydration? What? Why dehydration? That's water more concentrated, right? And literally more concentrated, thicker blood. So that's why we're giving anticoagulants. Okay. So know your Ruchow's triangle. You can look it up, it's all over everywhere. Very readily available. Okay. And these are the three things that must exist to lead to a blood clot that can cause an MI or any of the other stuff we talked about. The other thing about vascularization I want to bring up is the difference between vessels and arteries. How are you going to tell if it's a vascular problem your patient has or an arterial problem? Let's start with the basic differences between vessels and arteries. And yeah, between arteries and veins. Vascular or arterial. Arteries and veins are all vessels. What's a vein have that an artery doesn't have?
Valves.
Where do veins carry blood? Back to the heart. Are there oxygen in veins? No. Arteries have oxygen, right? So your patient presents with cold feet, the skin is shiny and hairless. There's no hair growing. The skin is shiny. Let's just take this. Shiny skin and no hair. Is that a vein or an arterial problem? Artery. Why? Hair's not going to grow without oxygen. And the skin's going to take on a shiny look.
news.
You see it. It's just really shiny. Call me if you want. You see it real smooth, shiny. But you'll see it. It's very interesting.
So watch for that. Okay? And then as it progresses, it becomes blue. But you may just see shiny and hairless. It's an arterial problem. May not be extreme, but it is. Now, how about a real ruddy-looking, swollen foot?
Ruddy meaning kind of reddish, hard. Veins. Because the blood's getting there, but not getting back. Hence the swollenness, hence that ruddy look. The Walmart ladies on the little cart, you know, with the elephant legs. You know the ones, right? Yeah, elephant leg Walmart ladies. That's what I want you to think of. That's when you think about vascular problems. They've got the arteries, they've got the arterial flow. They've got all sorts of flabby, what do we have in the leg? Valves. And it won't come back. Got it? So if I ask you some questions about that next week, you'll be able to tell me the difference between, if I tell you how someone presents, you'll be able to tell me if it's an arterial problem or a vascular problem. Maybe give some more thought to it. Get some stuff up. Look at your patients. Is it an arterial problem? Let's go.
What would cause the weak valves?
Age, obesity, too much fat on, too much pressure. Too much body for those poor little vessels to try to have to maintain. Think about your Walmart lady for this class. Yeah.
What about immobility?
Well, yeah, eventually it's going to lead to immobility, right?
Well, does that?
Either will. Because if you can't, it's going to lead to non-function at the extreme. Got it? Okay, for Charles Triangle. No, Rachel's trying to know how vascular problems are going to present versus arterial problems. What are they going to look like? Okay, let's talk just a little bit more about the heart. A little more about cardiac issues. So that was better than a whole lecture on lymph and circulation, wasn't it? Those are my pearls I want from that. It's good, right? You want the pearls, you don't want all the other stuff. Don't tell me anything that's not perfectly important. It's going to apply directly to what I'm going to be tested on, right? I need to know in practice. That's something to be said for that. Okay, cardiac disorders. What is that directory? We don't want you. Heart fails sometimes, right? It may not be a vascular problem. It may be a problem with the tissues. Maybe a problem with the pericardium. The heart itself has a problem. The heart as an organ. Okay. Heart failure is a complex syndrome in which the heart is unable to pump enough blood to meet the metabolic needs of the body. As a result, cardiac output falls, and as soon as cardiac output falls, tissue perfusion of oxygen decreases throughout the body. Right? So if the heart's not working efficiently, every single organ is threatened because it's not getting the oxygen it needs for perfusion. It can be a structural inflammatory disorder. It can be excessive demands on a normal heart. Right? As heart failure progresses, the compensatory mechanisms begin to kick in, and then heart function may continue to deteriorate. At that point, so may lung function, as we talked about. Let's see, what else? So you can have systolic failure, you can have diastolic failure, different sides of the heart can fail. Yeah. Yeah, would you like me to plug that in? That'd be good, wouldn't it? I got it all right here, I know what your problem is. It's all in front of me. There we go, is that better? Oh, no. Do you have a screen? Yeah, self-focused. You get that bias of yours. You know, you really get, like, hyper-focused on what you're doing, which is good, because then the whole building can fall around you. Down, like when you were in the ER, right? I mean, yeah, those nurses really had to be hyper-focused.
It was like a movie. There's, like, kind of she was moving down from the patient.
But you get this hyper-focus ability to just concentrate on what you're doing because everything else goes. Anyway, so I'll try not to be so hyper-focused. Okay. Let's see. So remember how the heart flows. The hemodynamic effects of left-sided heart failure. What's going to happen? You have a problem with pulmonary congestion, right? See what's going on with your heart. This is from your text. You can look it up, read a little bit more about it. And right-sided heart failure. Okay. Congested systemic circulation. And right-sided. Congested portal. The liver's involved. Pulmonary circulation, not too bad. Maybe we got a real problem on the left side of the pulmonary circulation. Right sided. Heart failure, low versus high output failure. The heart may fail because it's pumping too fast, pumping too much out. It'll progress to where it's not pumping enough. Low failure. We can have heart problems that are chronic and heart problems that are acute. Pulmonary edema is a result. Okay. Like my patient who had flash pulmonary edema. You get the buildup of fluid in the lungs because of the heart failure. Rheumatic fever, heart disease can all affect, that can affect the valves. People have had, you've heard of rheumatic fever and how it's a valve, can affect valves. Right? It's caused by strep. Have you seen any charts yet? You will if you haven't yet already. People that have untreated strep can have valvular disease. And it's not uncommon for them to have valvular replacements later in life. We're seeing older we see older people now that didn't have the antibiotics available when they were children who have new heart valves. I think so one of the students had a patient like that at Marin General last week. Was that one of you? Yeah. Okay. Look for that, it's not uncommon. There's infective and inflammatory diseases of the heart muscle itself. The heart muscle, just like any organ, can have a disease unto itself. So remember that too. Aside from all these other mechanical problems of vascularization that we discussed earlier, the heart itself can have be inflamed. You can have pericarditis, endocarditis, myocarditis. Okay? That inflammation of the heart itself, or the endocardium. Congestive peritonitis. Lovely, huh? Your text has some nice pictures. Valvular heart disease. The valves can be damaged or diseased. When you're hearing a heart murmur, what is that? Have you heard murmurs yet? Backflow. Right. Heart valves. You have tricuspid valves, right? So you have these three things coming together. If they're flabby, damaged or simply malformed, they're going to allow some swishing back, some backflow. That's your murmur. It's a valvular disease or valvular disorder. It's not always a disease state. It can come from disease. It may be just a genetic defect. I really like this. The valves can also be stenotic. What does that mean? What's stenotic? Hard. They can be hard. If they're hard, they're not going to flop open and close this readily. That's another problem we can have from. It can be too floppy. They can just get hard and stay open and allow that murmur. These are valvular diseases within the heart. Disorders. Okay. Here's one. There's so much fiber here. It's pulled back. Retracted fibroid valve openings. Incomplete or regurgitant heart valves. Stenosis. Mitral stenosis, that's very common. Mitral valve stenosis. Look for that. Mitral valve regurgitation. So first you have the stenosis, right? But the valve's not going to close all the way. So you get some regurgitation. Flows back. And that's the shh you hear. And that's exactly what you hear here. Shh. And that's that. You hear. You know, boom, bah, shh. And it's like the sex drop. And the beat. And that's the blood going backwards. Obviously not the most effective functioning heart, is it? If you've got this regurgitation. So there can be valvular problems. Mitral valve prolapse. Okay, so the valve is not functioning, allows the blood to go back. Most common. And there are others, aortic stenosis. I mean, so all the valves can be involved and cause problems. So you have valvular heart disease. The tricuspid, the pulmonic, we talked about the other. You can have enlarged hearts, cardiomyopathy. Okay. It can be primary or secondary. So it can be secondary to what? Mm-hmm. Why would someone have cardiomyopathy? Enlarged, big. Maybe when there was so much going on, or maybe there's something that caused the heart to get bigger. Maybe an athlete, a child that worked really hard as an athlete, all the way up, may have an enlarged heart. It may not be a problem, and it may be, okay? It may be primary. They may simply be born with a heart defect. It's this huge heart. A lot of different reasons. And it may or may not be a problem. Okay. So we have coronary heart diseases, we have cardiomyopathies. What about hypertension? We learned a little bit about hypertension in Gero or Patho. We have a little bit of a background, right? Yeah. Most hypertension is of unknown cause, correct? We don't know. It's primary. Most hypertensions are primary. We don't know what causes them. There are obvious secondary hypertension. Can you think about what would cause a secondary hypertension? What would be a cause? Secondary hypertension. How about atherosclerosis, where the veins are narrower, therefore there's more pressure? That would be a diagnosis of secondary hypertension. Secondary meaning we know the cause, right? Most of the time we don't know the cause. We know precipitating factors, yeah, poor diet, what else did you say? yeah. Well, I mean, we know some of the predisposing factors to hypertension. But generally, it's a primary disease, the majority of it. There are times when we know that it's secondary, we can point to a cause, but not always. Okay, congenital valve diseases. We've talked a little bit about rheumatic fever. That's what leads to valve disease. What else? Infective endocarditis, where the tissue surrounding the heart becomes infected. That's why we're so careful about PICC lines. We're so careful when we learn to clean them. We have to change the dressings, because you can get endocarditis easily from an infected PICC line. One of the many things. IV drug use, invasive catheters, yeah, dental health. Myocarditis, myocardial tissue becomes a problem, alcohol use, radiation, stress. Okay, valvular heart disease. Okay, heart failure, what else? Talked about pulmonary edema. Talked about rheumatic disease. Endocarditis, pericarditis. What else do we want to say? Anything? I don't think so. Doing on time. We said enough of that, right? Okay, then don't look at the rest of those slides. Does that make you happier? Okay, cross them out. You got the high points. No, okay, let me review. Know that the heart itself can be diseased. Know that there are valvular diseases. Okay. There's an enlarged heart that can cause problems. Rheumatic fever can lead to valvular dysfunction. What is a murmur? Right. What is a murmur? What is pericarditis? What is myocarditis? What is pericarditis? How can it be caused? That's it. Endocarditis, myocarditis.
Mm-hmm.
The heart tissue, heart muscle, correct? Heart muscle, valvular problems. What's valvular stenosis? Of the valves. Okay. What's a heart murmur? We got all this, right? Do we have to belabor it? No. So don't read on and on and on and look at 50 slides. Just know that. Like those 5 points. Does that help you? Yeah. Okay. All right. Now what? Can't look at that. We have time. Yay! We have time for another little exercise. Okay, you stop. Okay, now, even like in the last 10 years, we've realized that women present a little differently. Stop. Share. Stop. Stop. Digestion, nausea, vomiting, upper back pain. Okay, considerably different. Many women in the decades previous have been sent home from the ER, gone home and died from a heart attack. Because they said, oh, sweetie, it must have been that Indian food you had. Right? Huh. Right? I love Indian food. But sometimes you get indigestion from Indian food, don't you? Am I the only one that gets indigestion from all that hot? Well, yeah, but for me, my Irish culture with that hot curry, I tell you sometimes. Okay. So for me, right, it may have been the Indian food. Could have been the Mexican food, okay? No, it wasn't the corned beef and cabbage, for sure. All that salt, yeah, that's not good. And all the white bread, no, no. My culture has all its own problems. None of us are immune. Okay, so women are going to present a little differently, know this. And thank goodness recent research has come out to show that. Have some of you been on cardiac floors? You've seen ECGs, right? Electrocardiograms? Yeah. Okay. You can see changes with MIs, with angina. Okay. So from unstable angina, from just a little bit of problem, you can move right into a cardiac infarction. Or not. It can be chronic. So that silent angina is often progressive. Not all kinds of angina are progressive, but that silent little part can be.
So the chronic is progressive?
The chronic is progressive, yeah. Chronic angina can be progressive. So the word angina simply means a decreased oxygen supply of the heart. It's a very general term, and there are several different kinds of angina, or angina, however you want to. So we give meds for this, don't we? Some of you must have had angina as a diagnosis for your patient, or a secondary diagnosis, yeah. We give... Let me see if I can get my... I should go back to my... My cardio, I'm way ahead of my notes here. That's why I don't usually use these, because I get so confused. Okay. Okay, and also I mix these all up. Yeah. Okay, we use medications that reduce the demands on the heart. So what's a primary medication we might use to reduce demands on the heart? Yeah, we can use beta blockers. Anybody use any nitrous oxide yet? Not nitrous oxide, no. Nitroglycerin, thank you. Nitroglycerin. No, not nitrous oxide, nitroglycerin. Nitroglycerin, yeah, in tabs. Or anybody given it in paste yet? Tell us about that.
Paste?
Yeah, you give it in paste?
Well, it was in like a tube, and we had a patch, and it had like little measurements.
Exactly.
My patient... She had
really high blood pressure, yeah. And they tried like 3 different things.
I took her blood pressure so many times that day, but then the nitroglycerin was the last thing they did, and that helped drop it down to
really fast. It's a very potent drug.
And she was prescribed like an inch,
which was interesting. It's usually like, right. That's why I want to bring it up. It's an odd kind of thing. It comes in a paste, and yeah, it's prescribed by the inch. It's like a toothpaste. Was it a toothpaste tube,
yeah.
Or was it a little? I've seen it in a toothpaste tube, and then you have this little special piece of, it's like parchment paper, right? And with measurements, so you have an inch or 2 inches or whatever. And then you slap it on them with some paper tape, and that's it. And it works very quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing. What are your personal precautions in dealing with that paste?
You have to make sure you don't touch it so it works.
Because what's going to happen if you touch the paste? Right. And if you have normal blood pressure, you're going to faint, end up on the floor. Okay, because you won't get enough circulation to your brain. So what it does is it quickly dilates the vessels. Okay, paste is one way to go. And yes, we give it for high blood pressure. We also give it for cases of angina. A common is little tabs, nitro tabs. You put them under your tongue. Anybody have a patient with nitro tabs? Sublingual, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I wanted to know. Did you know the sequela on it? Yeah, you give one tab, and if you don't see a relief, you give a second tab, and up to three. Right. So, and what special thing did you see about those little sublingual tabs? Did you get to see them? Okay, they're kept in, anybody know the special packaging for nitro tabs? Anybody know? They're in little amber colored bottles because they're light sensitive. So if you see a little amber colored bottle next to your Jerry patients, chances are that's nitro tabs. And these people that have angina generally have these little bottles, and they're not going to get very far from that bottle at all. You kick them for a walk and they have their little purse because they have their nitro bottle with them. And that's, they're like, really want them close because they can stop the symptoms of angina right away with that med, which is very cool. We give low-dose aspirin, right? Why would we give 81 milligrams of aspirin, which you'll see often for cardiac patients in general? Why are we giving 81 milligrams? So don't you dare tell me it's for pain on your med sheets. 81 milligrams, what's that going to do to a 200-pound man for pain? Anything? No. Why? Yeah, use a big word. Yes, anticoagulant. Okay, no more thin blood. Okay, we're gonna use a big one. Anticoagulant. So if she thinks you're a med student, don't you dare say thin blood. Okay, you're gonna give herself away. Okay, what year are you? Anticoagulant. Okay, you got that because that tells us what it does, right? Thinning blood. Well, yeah, why do we do that? Anticoagulant. Okay, I'm cutting down the ability to coagulate because we don't want any thrombi form. We don't want any pieces. Or we don't want any thrombi to get stuck, all right? Because you have these atherosclerotic lesions. Atherosclerotic lesions can break off, can travel, can cause emboli, get stuck in another atherosclerotic lesion, you have a block, and now you have a heart attack, all right? So we want to keep the blood flowing and clotting at a very slow time, okay? High PT INRs, all right? Times high. Okay, we can look at the strips for angina. I'm not going to ask anything about that. But if you happen to see it in the hospitals, it's kind of fun. Let's see, what else about angina? It's all about coronary blood flow. Right? It's all about coronary blood flow to the heart. So when people have angina, there's a defect there. Sometimes it's subtle. It's not a problem. You can easily give some nitro. We're okay. Other times it can be progressive and chronic and lead to a heart attack. So your ultimate occlusion of blood to the heart ends up in a heart attack. Now remember that we don't during an acute MI, all the heart may not be affected. You may have part of the heart where the tissue dies and the rest can compensate, right? So think about that. It's not necessarily an all or nothing thing. Okay, so we'll talk about that a little bit. Keep that in mind. It could be just a little part that dies off from being non-oxygenated for a while, or it can be the whole heart can go quickly, or it can just be a vascular occlusion that maybe diminishes the blood flow for a while. We can expand the vessels, and then we're fine. Okay? We can have aneurysms. All right, it can rupture. Another vessel problem. Hopefully, it's all coming together here. Specific kinds of angina: anginal pectoris, is chest pain resulting from reduced coronary blood flow or ischemia. This is tightness. Radiates to the jaw. Of course, you're going to get all this. Okay. Some testing. I'm not going to ask you testing. What's acute coronary syndrome? What is acute coronary syndrome? I'm getting completely off my notes. It's a condition of unstable cardiac ischemia. It may or may not cause significant injury to the myocardial tissue. Okay, so we have ischemia. Ischemia means what? Lack of oxygen through part of the heart, but maybe it's enough, not so much that there's any damage, but a deficiency, okay, in blood flow to the myocardial tissue. Right. Usually causes angina to occur. And it's acute coronary syndrome, maybe caused by a rupture, erosion of the plaque, maybe a spasm, okay, progressive obstruction, inflammation, maybe by an increased myocardial oxygen demand or a decreased supply. So what's going to cause an increased myocardial oxygen demand? It's a big word, but it's a simple thing. What's going to cause an increased demand for oxygen on the heart? It's going to cause it. Exercise. Yeah. Exercise. Why do these athletes that have undiagnosed cardiac problems die during the triathlon? Right. Increased demand on the heart. Okay. And or decreased supply of oxygen. Maybe there's a problem with the lungs. You're not breathing enough. Maybe there's a problem with oxygenation. Maybe there's a respiratory issue that then affects the heart. And we can have acute coronary syndrome. Again, a vast array of specifics, a very general diagnosis that you may see. Generally, ICU patient. More about MIs. So the extent of an acute myocardial infarction, remember, this is when the blood flow is stopped, can be limited by a swift return of blood flow. So if we can get the blood flowing again, it may be just a trans-ischemic accident. Seen that diagnosis? TIA? She had a little TIA, a little stroke, a little trans-ischemic accident. Blood flow in the heart stopped for a little while. It wasn't able to get to the brain. There was a little stroke. Then it resolved. Okay? What else? All right, let's talk about this. So, you have all these neat little waves, right? Remember, part of the heart tissue can die off and become ischemic and then virtually useless. Yet the heart can remain functional. But you're going to see very odd ECG changes. Why is that? What are we looking at when we look at those rhythm strips? What are we measuring? Right. The conductivity of the heart, right? We're watching electricity go through the heart. That's what the electrodes are picking up. That's why we can tell if there's a problem. That's why you can watch the beat. So if there is an injury, you're going to see strange things on those strips. Right. What else is going on? This electrical conductivity is coming into the heart, you know, into the bundle of His, going out. You know, you learned about the path of that. What's that going to do? Is a heart still going to be able to maintain pumping rhythmically? What do you think? Maybe, maybe not, depending on where it is. So there are some things we can do for that. Okay. But know that you're going to see differences. So when you're on the cardiac floor or have a cardiac patient, take a look. Have a nurse explain it to you. It's MedSurg 3, so we're not going to get into it. But it's kind of fun to look at. That there are differences in those rhythms based on the electrical conduction into the heart. And very often, if there's been injury, you're going to see some abnormalities. And they're specific. They can pretty much state where in the heart the problem is. Acute MI, we're going to obviously relieve the chest pain, reduce some cardiovascular load, right? Prevent complications, all these things. And then there are some things we can do, invasive procedures to get rid of the plaque, aren't we? There's the arterial little balloon pump placement. We can put stents in. Okay, we can do surgery, the Roto-Rooter kind of thing. Anybody have any heart patients yet that's had heart surgeries? Yeah. What did they have? Stents. Yeah, that's okay. Procedure. Yeah, stents. And what were the stents doing? Exactly. Stents are very common. We're going to put them in. We're going to keep them open. The clot's going to be pushed back. We're going to keep the artery patent with stents. Cardiac rehab is a lot of cardiac rehab going on. Nurses need to know about cardiac rehab after people have heart attacks. Very much a part of nursing. Let's see what else. Some good diagnoses for you, cardiac patients. There's some nice tests. Okay. The CKMB is a very interesting enzyme that's produced. We can actually look at this a day, an hour after a heart attack has happened and see if it was a heart attack. So did some of those cells stop working for a while? Or is there some permanent damage or what went on? A lot of other tests. We talked about aspirin. Fibrolytic agents. What's that? What's a fibrolytic agent? Antifibrin. What do you think? Think about that. What does that word mean? Antifibrillitic agent. What would be another word for these? Any guesses? These are clot busters. Okay? So we're going to bust up those clots with fibrillitic agents. Lytic. Okay? Going to get rid of the fibrin. All right? Fibrin goes together, makes a clot, and we bust it apart. It's this agent. So someone's having a clot in their heart, you might want to give them a fibrolytic agent. If they're having a stroke and their carotid artery is clogged, we know it, we can see it, there are times when we give a clot buster, a fibrolytic agent. Give aspirin, we talked about that. Give analgesics, obviously. Antidysrhythmic agents. Why would we give an antidysrhythmic? Dysrhythmic is when the rhythm isn't optimum, right? Okay, why would that be a problem with a heart attack? Let's go back to this picture. So if some of this is dead, what's happening to the pumping? It's not effective very often. So we try to restore some of that pumping ability. Sometimes we can, sometimes we can't. Okay. So we give something to hopefully get that rhythm normal. And sometimes we can't always do that. So that would be another reason for using a pacemaker, right? We use a pacemaker when the rhythms are weird. Sometimes people just have the age and they have different heart problems that impair the conductivity, therefore make the rhythms wacky. Also as a result of a heart attack. Okay. So we may do a pacemaker, implantable pacemaker, external pacemaker, whatever, as well as the medication. So here's some testing, electrocardiograms, echocardiogram, hemodynamic testing, myocardionuclear scans, all this, you'll see all this kind of thing. Talked about women, right? What is sudden cardiac death? Sudden cardiac death. Unexpected, abrupt, hours within onset, caused by ventricular fibrillation. Okay, the ventricle is going and the heart stops. Okay. If before that, you may have some acute coronary syndrome or a myocardial infarction. Sudden cardiac death is when it's just fast. People die real fast. Ideally, we want to restore cardiac output and tissue perfusion immediately if we can. If you see someone, this is when someone just all of a sudden falls down and dies. Sudden cardiac death. This is an emergency cardiac care, and that's why we all took the CPR classes and we know what to do, right? We talked a little bit about dysrhythmias, an irregular heartbeat because of electrical conduction. It's disturbed. Somehow it's disturbed. The excitability, the refractive, the conductivity, autonomicity is interrupted. Okay? So you can get tachycardia, bradycardic, and ectopic rhythms. Okay, tachy is fast, brady is slow, ectopic is all over the place. So this is when we might want to put in a pacemaker. And again, as I said, sometimes it's a result of damage to the heart itself. Other times, it's damage to the electrical, it's an impaired electrical conduction and the heart doesn't beat. Okay, so in cardiac rhythm, we want to identify the arrhythmia, make sure that the person is physically able, you know, doesn't have any other problems. If they do, we're going to treat the underlying cause. Sometimes we can use countershock. Anybody seen that, heard of that? If the rhythm is crazy, what do they do in ER? What are the paddles doing? Stopping heart and starting it again. So sometimes if there's these crazy rhythms and the heart's not working and the electrical conduction's all messed up, we stop it and start it again. Hopefully to get it going, right? We beat it. Okay. Is there any tissue alive in there that we can, that we accept the electro, the shock, right? The transmission of electricity into the heart to make that muscle start pumping again. A defibrillator is stopping the going like this. It stops it. It's not giving them a shock as much. Well, unless it's a pacemaker. There are two different things. Right, okay. So she's going to stop it from going like this, and then she's going to, then the pacemaker's going to kick in it, right? So she's got the, yeah, she's got a lot of cardio problems. No, good for her. She's hanging in there. How old is she?
74.
Oh, she's young.
She's taking care of her grandchildren.
Poor lady. And she's the sickest.
And they're like
10 bucks. Yeah, poor lady. Okay, what else? We have medications, of course. This is what suppressed dysrhythmia is. Let's see what else. Cardiac rhythm disorders. We talked about that. If they're beating too fast, beating too slow, getting the electronic pulse is wrong, if it's not being accepted correctly, maybe a result of an MI, maybe just a result of electrical conduction. We're going to look at all these things. Sometimes we can put in new vessels, can't we? We can actually take a vessel from the leg and put it into the heart. Very cool, right? Percutaneous coronary revascularization. You're going to see it. Or percutaneous transluminal coronary angioplasty. Or stents, like you saw. Okay. Who saw? You saw. No, you saw stents. You saw stents. So one of you ladies over there saw stents. Okay, we can do a graft. We actually take out the plaque and put in a little piece of webbing, of fabric, a little tiny graft. Right? And we can use lasers. So there's all sorts of ways to help the heart be able to continue working and the vascularization that is impaired to be fixed. So your grandmother is 74 with all these problems is doing okay.
She has 4
fibers,
but asymptomatic.
Wow. Like,
my mom's like, go to the doctor, go to
the doctor. Is she on a lot of meds? Does she have any of these revascularization procedures? Does she have any stents or anything? Amazing. awesome lady.
A couple weeks ago.
But look at this lady. I mean, she's got all these problems, and we're treating them, aren't we? And she's maintaining. Yeah. It's hearts are great. We do really, really well with hearts. So this is where you can be encouraging. Yes, the medical practice knows a lot about cardiac. We can fix a lot of heart problems. It's great. We can do all these things and more. We've got hearts down. So given a choice, I would much rather have heart problems than cancer. Hearts, we know. It's pretty mechanical. We can fix hearts. We know what's going on. We have all these meds. We can decrease blood pressure. We can increase blood pressure. We can play with it all. We got that down. Okay? If somebody seeks care. If your grandmother stays home and dies, then we have a problem. Okay, let's see. What else? More tests. Acute coronary syndrome. We talked about that. Tests for those. Meds. Obviously, we're going to give some anti-blood clotting. Aspirin. Heparin, right? And I played the drugs. Here's some more nice nursing diagnoses for you. You can use your care plans. And it looks like you need a little break. Should we break until 10? Let's do that.